And welcome everybody to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. We had a little bit of technical issues here, which hopefully are resolved. Kyle, did you make it into Skype land, into YouTube land, Overtime land?
What do you mean,
make it? I don't know. Yeah, you're here. Skype land people, are you there?
We are. We are here.
Are we, on,
we are so here.
Are we on YouTube, in fact?
We are on YouTube as well, and we sound good.
I couldn't ask for anything more then. I think we still have the hum. Do you guys hear the hum? Can you hear the hum?
We do not hear the hum.
Oh, you don't hear the hum.
No. And so, when you were mentioning the hum, Alex and us were all muted, so it's not something coming from us, I don't think.
Right. Okay. But maybe it's not anything that's going past our own headphones here in the studio.
It might be our headphone mixer.
All right.
We'll play with it later.
We're always looking for things to distract us.
And, oh, wait, where's the mic?
Yeah, we found that. Okay. Our phone number here, by the way, you can call us, 802-321-4225. We'd love to hear from you. And I'd love to never hear this music again. It's a bad idea. Just a bad idea. All right.
Are we going to use that? Are we going to be asking our callers for their predictions tonight? Is that part of this?
We don't ask our callers for anything. Our callers are completely independent. They can do whatever they wish. So if they want to give us predictions or, you know, tell us something about 2024, they're welcome to, but they don't have to.
Well, I'd suggest that we use the sound effects and request ample notice for either a prediction or some kind of retrospective so that you can get the maximum amount of value out of all of this preparation for today's episode.
Well, I've already closed the file, but I'll reopen it again if there's demand for it.
Very good.
Great expense to me. Yeah, Rob, go ahead. I'm going to sit back for a little bit.
One thing I'm very excited about this New Year's Day, as I am every New Year's Day, is Public Domain Day, which you out there listening and you here joining me on this program may know is the day where we celebrate all the new things that the public domain now has access to because the copyrights have run out. And this Public Domain Day is a landmark Public Domain Day. It's a milestone Public Domain Day because everything made in the 1920s, every film, text, song, image, everything from the 1920s is now in the public domain. That doesn't extend to sound recordings, particular sound recordings, which have their own extra loop, you know, leaps and bounds of copyright protecting them. But the song itself, the composition and the lyrics, those are public domain now. So we have now all sorts of new good stuff that belongs to all of us in pop culture. Things like A Farewell to Arms by Hemingway, A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf, some nice light reading there. Cup of Gold by John Steinbeck. Lots of great films. More Mickey Mouse films, including the talking version of Mickey Mouse, is now public domain. The Skeleton Dance by Disney, which was a very exciting cartoon in its day and is still very popular. Blackmail, Alfred Hitchcock's first sound film, is now public domain. The Coconuts, which is the first Marx Brothers film, now belongs to all of us. We just rewatched it recently, and a lot of it holds up. John Ford's The Black Watch, all sorts of exciting things. Popeye, the character, is now public domain. Tintin, from the famous stories, is now public domain. Singing in the Rain, the song, is public domain. You can sing it, you can publish it, you can cover it, and it is free to use. Bolero by Ravel, An American in Paris by Gershwin, Ain't Misbehavin'.
Hold on. Bolero by Ravel, that's just becoming available now?
It is, yes.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that written in like 1493 or something?
No, it was 1928.
You're kidding.
Is when it was made.
Wow.
And published in this country in 29, and so it is now public domain. All sorts of cool stuff. If you do a search for Public Domain Day, there is a great page at Duke Law, which has a which has a center directly covering public domain and which is instrumental in celebrating Public Domain Day. And you can see all kinds of cool lists of things that now belong to you along with everyone else in this country.
Well, it belongs to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to you. Yeah. Okay. That's good news. Good to know.
Very cool stuff.
We have open phone lines, 802-321-4225, 802-321-4225. Something to say, Kyle?
Well, they're not open right now.
What do you mean they're not open right now?
Because we have a call.
I didn't know we had a call. I didn't hear the phone ring.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
It's one of those ones.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, Emmanuel.
It's Rebel. You could have mentioned that too, Kyle, but I guess you didn't feel that was important.
The check cleared.
Yes, Rebel, what's on your mind this New Year's Day?
I'd like to predict that everyone will have a very efficient computing experience.
Okay, what the hell does that mean?
I don't know. Ever since I got my nice new all-in-one that I have Linux on, it's very, you know, efficient, because when I had this all-in-one, it came with Windows 11, and it's... For some reason, this model of HP computer does not work well with Windows 11, because sometimes Windows 11, like, doesn't, lags on some computers. And this was one of them. And it was a really good thing that, I mean, the laptop that I bought, it worked fine. But this just didn't work well with it. And ever since I couldn't, we put Linux on it. And it's been working great.
So Linux to the rescue yet again.
Right. Now, what I'm looking for is an alternative to TextNow, because they have a lot of advertisements. Oh, and let me just mention one thing. Well, I'll get back to that in a minute. I noticed that I wanted to, you know, get a haircut because somebody that I know works at this barbershop, and I wanted to make an appointment. They said, well, you make an appointment. I figured I'd call and make an appointment. Oh, no, you got to do it online. But it's not go to their website. You go to this third-party website, and you have to give them your credit card number. You have to give them your, like, information, phone number. I mean, I just want to make an appointment. Like, I've heard of people doing this with job applications. Like, you have to create an account to you know, for this chain of, be it movie theaters or supermarket.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on this. It's nonsense that you have to make accounts to do the most basic of things. I'd use a different barbershop, or, you know, just knock on the door and say, hey, can I get my haircut now?
Well, no, if I know the person that works there that does the, you know, the haircut, and I asked them about that. I said, can you do that? I said, well, no, the owner doesn't want to do it. You got to do it this way, because people have been making appointments and not showing up or things like that.
Yeah, but if you're literally there, obviously you're going to show up. So I don't know. I see why people want to embrace the new way of doing things, but also you got to hold on to the old way too, because that's what a lot of people still want to use. And to exclude them, you're going to lose customers.
Well, why don't you just have your website, you know, barber.com. I mean, I'm not going to give the name, but or whatever. Whatever barber, the name is.
Barber.com. Yeah, so that's a good one.
Well, whatever the name is, the barbershop or whatever the name is, the establishment.com, and then have your website click, would you like to make an appointment? Make an appointment. Here's the list of barbers that we have. Would you like to make an appointment with this barber? You know,
have you ever, Rebel, have you ever made a website?
You know, I was thinking of like going to like GoDaddy and saying like, you know, is barber.com available or is...
That's not what I mean. I mean, have you ever designed a website with functionality in it? It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And you know, the people that do know how to do this tend not to be around too much to do it for others. So I can see why somebody would go for something where somebody else is involved, although it cuts into their profits as well. But that's why you have all these food delivery services and the restaurants don't do it themselves, because it's hard. It's hard work. And, you know, you want to hand it off to somebody else.
No, you have somebody like Wix or like one of these website companies that make a website for you, design it for you. The barbershop can say, I like a website, and here's the list of barbers, here's their pictures, and, you know, here's our phone number, and Just make a website so that people can make appointments.
And that's probably what they've done. They've probably done that to an extent. They might have overdone it a bit by saying it's the only way you can make appointments, but it's you're trusting a third party to get involved.
And same thing with billing, getting a job at one of these chains, like either movie theater or a supermarket or something. Well, you go on our website and then click on hiring or whatever, and then create an account with your username and, I don't want a password. I'm just applying for it.
They're testing your commitment at that stage. They're saying, well, if this person really wants a job, he'll do what we, he'll jump through some
Well, another chain does
hoops.
Not do that. Another chain does that. They have a list. They said, are you hiring? Oh, here's a list of our locations. Which location do you want to work at? And you click the location, and then you put your name and simple information. And then they get back to you.
Different people do things differently. That's how it works. Yeah. So go with the one that you're most comfortable with.
Right. I was going to mention an alternative to TextNow, because they have all these advertisements and when you use it on your phone. And I'm looking for what is it called? It's a voice over IP service that I'm looking for that is good, but you have to put it on your computer. This is one good thing about Google, that the Chrome, that it makes it so that it saves your whatever you did on Chrome for the past 30 days. And I'm trying to look for.
I think they all do that. I'm pretty sure Firefox can do the same thing.
Trying to remember what the name of that voice over IP service was that I used. That's good, but you have to put it on your computer, and it doesn't run on Linux. Do you know of any things? What I want to do is, I don't want to use Asterisk. Asterisk is like a business kind of a thing, like for many lines, I guess. You have a simple, because Google Voice, for some reason they're getting rid of Google Voice.
They're getting rid of Google Voice?
Yeah, they're doing away with the Google Voice feature.
Wait, isn't that what we're using right now? Gila, you look flustered. Are we getting this wrong?
Yeah, I think you're muted. Not anymore. Rebel, you've told us repeatedly that Google Voice is going away, and it's never been true. It's still not true.
Somebody at Google told me.
At Google? How do you do that?
At the Google store in Manhattan.
The Google store in Manhattan. Well, they'd know.
Yeah. I asked. I said, why isn't my Google account working? And I said, well, they're doing away with the voice feature.
Maybe they just wanted you not to ask any more questions. I don't know. That's just a theory. They're like that to me. Well, Rebel, while you're typing and figuring things out, we're gonna get some more calls in here. So if that's okay with you, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, have a good night.
I'll be in California next week.
All right. We look forward to it. Good night. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. 802-321-4225. Did you hear this story about Volkswagen? Their automotive software company, nobody knows the name of this, right? Does anybody know the name of Volkswagen's automotive software company? You can say no. Okay.
Can't say that I do.
Cariad, C-A-R-I-A-D, never heard of them. They exposed data collected from around 800,000 electric cars. So you may not have heard of them, but they may have heard of you. The info could be linked to drivers' names and reveal precise vehicle locations. Terabytes of Volkswagen customer details and Amazon cloud storage remained unprotected for months, allowing anyone with little technical knowledge to track drivers' movement or gather personal information. The exposed databases include details for VW, seat, whatever seat is, Audi and Skoda vehicles, with geolocation data for some of them being as precise as a few centimeters. Access to the car data was possible due to Cariad's incorrect configuration in two IT applications. That's according to a company representative who spoke to Bleeping Computer. Carrie Ebb was informed on November 26th of the issue by our friends over at the Chaos Computer Club, CCC, the largest organization of ethical hackers in Europe, that for more than 30 years have promoted security, privacy, and free access to information. According to the German publication Der Spiegel, the CCC found out about the vulnerability from a whistleblower and tested the insecure access before informing CARIAD and Volkswagen providing technical details. A CARIAD spokesman said that the exposed data affected only vehicles connected to the internet and had not and basically had been registered for online services. From the nearly 800,000 vehicles exposed, the researchers found geolocation data for 460,000 cars, for some of them with an accuracy of 10 centimeters. A little over 30 vehicles were part of Hamburg police's fleet of patrol cars, while others belonged to suspected intelligence service employees, according to Der Spiegel. The company said that the CCC hackers could access the data only after bypassing several security mechanisms that required significant time and technical expertise. And because individual vehicle data was pseudonymized? How do you say that?
Pseudo-anonymous?
Well, no, that's not how it looks.
Sodomized?
Did you say that? No.
Pseudonymized.
Okay, whatever.
Pseudo-anonymous.
I hate that word. For privacy purposes, the hackers had to combine different data sets to associate the details with a particular user. However, Der Spiegel assembled a team of IT experts and journalists who found location details collected from the cars of two German politicians. So there's that. That's something. And in that particular case, you know, you got to blame the company for not doing its job of keeping this data secure. But no doubt that was talked about at CCC at Congress over in Hamburg this past week. And I'm sure there's a video of that someplace. So, yeah, okay, 802-321-4225. I'm going to hold the phone lines open just for a little while longer.
Yeah, but about that CARIAD story, like, it's wild because the location of someone's vehicle is... I can't think of very many pieces of data that would be more potentially dangerous in terms of actual real-world personal security. You know, I think a lot of people have reasons to not want the world to have access to their location. The other interesting thing about the word CARIAD is it's a Welsh name that means love. So, I don't know. I don't know if that's cosmically significant here.
No phone calls, Kyle?
I'm going to say no. The okay. Phone line is open.
All right.
As it has been.
Okay. Okay, I've got one more story here. And Alex, I'm going to ask you for your opinion on this because it's been all over the news. Chinese state-sponsored hackers have breached the U.S. Treasury Department's computer security guardrails last month. They stole documents in what Treasury called a major incident. That's according to a letter to lawmakers that Treasury officials provided to Reuters on Monday. The hackers compromised third-party cybersecurity service provider Beyond Trust. Wow, what a name. And were able to access unclassified documents, the letter said. According to that letter, hackers gained access to a key used by the vendor to secure a cloud-based service used to remotely provide technical support for Treasury Department offices and end users. With access to the stolen key, the threat actor was able to override the service's security, remotely access certain Treasury user workstations, and access certain unclassified documents maintained by those users. How big a deal is this?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal in that it shows us, again, the lengths to which China and other sophisticated foreign adversaries will go in order to access confidential information of the federal government. What's also fascinating about this, too, is that they're going after Treasury-related data here. It's not necessarily classified information, intelligence, probably economically motivated in some ways. Maybe they were looking at perhaps sanctions related data, maybe something with OFAC, the Office of Foreign Asset Controls, or CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. These are things that are highly sensitive, especially with respect to international trade and companies that may have operations within the United States, who are thinking about doing business in the United States, who are thinking about buying businesses or becoming acquired within the United States. So this could be those adversaries looking for a leg up from the federal government's various departments and breaching these third parties through that way. But it's also somewhat fascinating in that they weren't going after the Department of Commerce itself. They figured out who these third-party vendors were. This Beyond Trust doesn't sound like it had very robust security controls in place around the it was probably the key signing keys that were compromised in order to perpetuate this type of attack or to propel it in some way. So, I think it's interesting. I think it's fascinating, but I don't think it's nearly as damaging as the breach of the entire telecommunications network that we had discussed over the last couple of weeks on the show as well.
Does seem like everything is getting breached lately. I have to wonder where is this all going to go? You know, all our data is in everybody's hands, it seems.
Yeah, and it's just normalized. Just these bad practices are just so ordinary, routine, and normal now that at some point they're going to cease to be news stories.
Yeah, I think like the biggest problem is like it's sort of become an industry that itself thrives on broken stuff, like, you know, whether it's crisis response or, mm-hmm. you know, people building security appliances and crap, like all of that is self-perpetuating. And it's like one of those things where if it works too well, they don't really, you know, they make themselves sort of not useful, or I don't know, like they can't sell more upgrades or they can't sell licensing for something. All of that, like, it seems is defeating the actual necessity, and like there needs to be less incentive to profit from broken stuff.
Yep, sounds about right to me. Yeah, Alex, go ahead.
I think this also is fascinating on another level too, because it's just yet again an indication that cybersecurity is extraordinarily difficult when it comes to mitigating risks that arise from third parties. There are just not that many things that you can do as, let's say, a CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, or somebody who's, let's say, you know, managing incidents or within a SOC, to affect third parties, right? I mean, you can require certain representations from them. You can send them really annoying Excel spreadsheets that require them to document all of their security practices, and you can take a look at their past audits. But none of this is going to actually protect you proactively from somebody targeting a third party with which you work as a company. And so third-party risk mitigation is still, I think, one of the most difficult aspects of cybersecurity.
Gila, go ahead.
Just wanted to share that we did, in fact, get a prediction in the chat, a prediction for 2025. You don't have to play the noise. But Rebel said, my prediction for 2025 is that Off the Hook will be at the radio station for their show on WBAI.
Fascinating. Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's what Alex was referring to me, a sort of cost-benefit thing. Like, the desirability to use these sorts of vendors versus, building that in-house and closely monitoring it with your own sort of internal controls versus just saying this is a great deal and then wondering why you didn't calculate in the cost of trusting someone when it goes wrong. You got to sort of like indemnify your especially with information, private stuff, but like your systems, you got to value them enough to take care of them beyond the like lowest bid.
We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah to those that celebrate. Well, Hanukkah, I think.
It sure is.
This is Johnny Fusion.
Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I have a germ of an idea for my next article. And it has to do with this focus on STEM that we've had now for like 20 years. And I don't think STEM, clinical acumen, is enough to make someone a hacker.
Okay.
I think there needs to be cultivation of creativity and out-of-the-box thinking and a more rounded education. Because, like, a lot of stuff that we're seeing from the tech bros, like the dangerous stuff and the toxic stuff, probably could have been mitigated if they had some stronger basis in the humanity.
Yeah, but I think the incentive to mechanize or otherwise commodify innovation like that, it's that you get too many ideas, you know, too many dangerous ways of thinking, too much that's, you know, just a little more than, you know, what society can handle. You know, it's a catch-22, but sort of contained in some ways, the that spirit in a lot of these institutions. Like, you look at education, I think for a while talking about hacking had to be sanitized. It had to be like, you know, we're going to use another word for that, but it, or even STEM, like, there, it's a very formalized way that makes it safe. And the relative safety, I think, of the spirit you're trying to articulate is, it challenges some of those institutions, and whether be it a company, be it a school or a whatever environment groups of people are operating, and taking ideas and running with them and trying new things, there has to be some limitations in the way they're talked about. But I agree with you that the places where that's occurring themselves, I think, have evolution to be challenging themselves, I think, a bit more to embrace what you're talking about, or at least finding ways of not making it so bland, because there has to be an edge to it. There has to be some risk. There has to be when you're pushing bounds, that play, that innovation. You take risks when you play, when any actor or someone that performs or does something, like you said, in the humanities, that itself is, when it's so mechanized in a business environment where it's calculated, the spirit, you sort of soften the edge. It's not as daring, and you get less ideas, less stuff that challenges the broader construction or framework we're all living in. I don't know. I'm just talking off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, so, like, I'm going back to my early college education, right? Before I ended up in tech school, I was going to, like, a local junior college. And I wanted to take programming courses, even though I've been programming since I was 6 years old. But there were these prerequisites for these bonehead computer classes. And it became really clear they weren't teaching the right stuff. Like, there was this one class, CS17, supposedly computer logic. But what it really was COBOL flow charting. And the teacher sometimes would rail against hackers, but they're not real programmers, they're just hackers, because they didn't do this structured, technical, correct ways, you know? And I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like the difference between classical music and improvisational jazz, right? Where Code Monkeys are like the classical musicians, very rule-based, never coloring outside the lines. And then you got artists like Coltrane, who is still making great music, but the rules don't bound him, the old rules, right? You can't break it too much because then it would be noise instead of music, but it becomes great art. And it's the difference if you want to be a code monkey or you want to be a code poet, you know, because part of the hacker ethic is that art and beauty can be made with computers. Even the first programmer in the world, Ada Lovelace, you know, had the soul of a poet, and she was forced to learn sciences. And she said, well, what about poetical science? And she imagined great things, that creative things that Babbage's analytical engine could do someday, like compose music and stuff. And we're just kind of getting there with generative AI, you know, almost 200 years later. But I just find that focusing on tech stifles creativity and creative thinking. And you got to be able to bend the rules. Like, with computer programming, you can't break the rules or your code won't compile. But you can find these emergent behaviors and, you know, these little undocumented features and stuff like that, you know. And I miss kids having this spirit of exploration in the technical scene, you know, and just trying things, you know, breaking things, then unbreaking them. I mean, that's what hackers have done since eternity. Try something, it breaks, and then you fix it.
Yes.
Everyone still there? What happened?
Yeah, we heard you.
You know, I'm just trying to find, you know, and I don't know. You know me, I'm so anti-capitalist. Everything is so oriented towards being monetized, making money, and having stuff that you can make a profit off of instead of just doing shit for fun, just to see if you can do it.
I mean, it's kind of difficult, I think, like, we do live in that system to some degree, and to upend it, I've had a lot of this surface lately, but like, to upend it means like we can't make it work in a way that serves people. And I think if that's what's in front of us, taking apart something that is incredibly powerful and could actually be directed were people a bit more organized and intentional about it, just kind of, I'm so hopeful that we can come through with some of that. That's why I speak about regulatory stuff, or I mean it's maybe my naivete, but that was my understanding of how all of this ever worked. Did I get an education in how, like, corruption or how all the other variables in all of it affect the sort of altruism I'd like to think, or the ideal that we're capable of a society in the midst of capitalism? And I have as much sort of difficulty with it, but I just can't get on this thing of like, we must destroy and dismantle and, like, you know, burn it all down. Like, it just is not to me how you improve an advanced society. I think it, like, by becoming a developed society or a developing society, to, like,
get a do-over for being an advanced society. It doesn't really make sense. If we are at that level, we should use what tools of this society and our brains and stop being tricked like by the hustle or the traps of capitalism or how people are exploiting its openness. And I think that's even like something that state actors do. They dump money into our country and use it exactly the way it's intended, but to their ends. And like, that's why we're, and of course, like, we're this massive tax haven, and somehow we're wondering why there's corruption abound and why other places do it too. Like, if we can't get around that ourselves and clean house, why should anyone else expect to play by those rules? Like, that rules that goes for conquest, that goes for you know, the competitiveness in you know, sectors that are monopolies. We've talked about that in tech, but there's many other industries that sort of profit off of not functioning well. And we have to fix those things. And we can't let corruption prevent us fixing those things. We can't take our focus away from that. That's my attitude. I call it stupid, call it, you know, a shill for the capitalist system. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not in college anymore. I'm old enough to understand where and what this is. So, yeah, you can have your, like, disagreements with different things, but I'm being real about what is all around us when we go off the air and is really not going anywhere, as upset as we are about it.
Well, you know, Ursula K. Le Guin said that once upon a time, the divine right of kings was seen as inviolable and forever. And that went away. Capitalism is man-made, and anything man-made can be destroyed by man. And the thing is, though, capitalism is a rigged game. It really only benefits those at the top. And it needs an oppressed underclass to function because it's hierarchical, right? We have power generated at the top. Wealth goes upwards. You know, people's labor are used to generate profit for those above them. And while I do believe we do need to tear it down, I don't think it needs to be so much destructive as transformative, where we build a system that's based on equity and justice. You know, these are things that would benefit everyone instead of the few at the top.
Well, Johnny, I suggest you you put all this in writing because you make some compelling points, and it's certainly going to spark all kinds of discussion and debate, and that's what it's all about. So I hope we see some more submissions from you, and you continue to think you know, creatively and progressively.
Thanks, Emmanuel.
All right. You take care, and hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Bye now.
All right. Our phone number is 802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. And we'll have the phone line open just for a little while longer because it's been rough last couple of weeks, all the holidays and things. And now another year, God knows what, is ahead of us. And I hear the merry ring of the telephone as somebody else is calling us. So let me say good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Oliver, and today we went to a payphone in Millbrook, New York, and we tried it, but it didn't work because coin slot was jammed.
I know what you mean. Okay. What the hell was that? Alex, that wasn't one of yours, right?
No, that was not one of mine.
Okay, so we have genuine kids calling us now with their payphone odysseys. The more the merrier, sure. Why didn't the payphone work? We're going to have to transcribe
something
that.
Something about the coin slot.
The coin slot, yeah.
The coin slot was jammed.
Gummed. Oh, is that what it was? The coin slot was jammed.
Okay, jammed.
And where did they say they were? Somewhere in New York?
It sounded like Newbuck, New York, but I don't know if that's a place.
Is it Millbrook?
Okay, run a trace on Newbuck, New York. All right, we got a team on it. 802-321-4225.
Kid better run.
Wow. that was so unexpected, huh? Yeah.
I'll take it. We haven't had a good prank from the youths. We got another call, though.
And maybe it's another one of those pranks. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hello? Yes, turn on your radio or computer or whatever it is.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
I've been reading the magazine since, I think, 1984, 85.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried, is it in good financial state?
Well, that's
I don't see it in the book.
It's in the bookstores. In fact, I was just in a bookstore the other day and made sure to hunt it down. I'm not sure what bookstore you're looking in, but it should be in every Barnes & Noble and a bunch of other chains as well. It's just, it might be harder to find the bookstore than the magazine at this point.
Yeah, well, see, I'm phoning from Canada.
Yeah, you had Chapters, I think, is your book chain up there?
Yes.
Are they still around?
I don't think so. The big chains have basically disappeared. There's a few independent ones.
Well, you know, we're happy to supply independent bookstores if you know, they want to get the magazine. It's, you know, it's gotten harder. It's always been hard on publishers. But as to your question, you know, it really depends on how readers respond. If people subscribe, if people go to the bookstore, if people go to the conference, all of that helps us. All that helps us. And as you can see, we try hard to stay active and relevant and just, solvent. And it's worked up until now. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't work. We doubled down on the conference. We're doing conferences every year now. And I'm hoping that will make things grow and build up and just be a force, an annual force of independent thinking, technology, education, all kinds of really positive things. Because I think the community really, really needs that. The support that we have gotten every time, you know, we're in public someplace is astounding and amazing. So I always feel like there are people looking out for us. And hopefully that will continue. Things can always change. We know that. But with the support of readers, I think we'll be fine. Anything you want to add to that, Kyle?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, can I ask, who do I talk to at the bookstore?
Definitely talk to the whoever is in charge of magazine supply. Could be the manager, could be somebody else. And you just ask them, how do you get your magazines? If it's through a distributor, you can forward that information to us, and then we can contact that distributor, make sure that they're getting magazines from us and that they're going to that particular store. And to do that, you can write to oth@2600.com. And that'll get to us, and we can forward it that way. And that goes for anybody that wants to get magazines in their local stores. Now, it's harder overseas. We used to be in a lot of British bookstores, but they have made it so incredibly hard. And last time we even looked into that, we were threatened with a lawsuit. If we had an article that somehow rubbed somebody the wrong way, we'd be liable. And it was considering the literal pennies you make per copy sold, it just wasn't worth the trouble and the risk. So in those particular cases, we ask people to just subscribe. And now that we're digital, you know, you can subscribe anywhere in the world and get the magazine sent to you instantly. And I'll let you in on a secret. Tomorrow, I believe it's tomorrow, we're going to be unveiling some new pricing deals involving digital publications and analog publications as well. So it's what people have been asking for, and we're going to hopefully provide that. Now, Kyle, did you have something to add?
Yeah, just we're looking at as many different things that work. We've done this at a constant basis, basically reevaluating, seeing it's working, because things have been changing so much with retail distribution, as well as the digitization of publications and business models around that, and keeping people, getting things correct, having it look and appear like it's having to reinvent things and start over. You just end up not having a huge amount of time to even think about marketing and, you know, working on which retailers are opening up and doing better or worse. So it's the travails of any independent publisher. So exactly. We're definitely responsive. We take everything that people say to heart, and good ideas, things to try out, things that have worked for other people. Just basic stuff, costs, materials, they're always a concern. So we follow all that stuff. If you have a paper guy, let us know.
Yeah. I was getting a bit worried, but I think maybe I'm overreacting.
Mm-hmm. We all worry about, what's ahead, and there are always challenges that come our way, and we never can expect them. Like last summer, for instance, we discovered that our issues were sitting in a warehouse for a month without being delivered, and that resulted in us having to change our whole schedule for the next year to allow those issues to be on the newsstands for a decent amount of time. We got nothing from that. We got no compensation or anything. It always is the publisher that winds up paying for any screw-ups, and it's just, it's an unreasonable but almost funny situation sometimes.
Yeah, the irregularities that have, like, cascading effects like that, people don't really think about it. And, like, you get the news about something happening, and it's like, you have to make that calculation and then make it work for your business model, whether that's compacting a production schedule because something was delayed, or dealing with, issues that have been sitting, or, it's just, it's itself something that... can take a toll. And I actually really, really appreciate your concern, because we try to tell people everything that we can about what we're facing or what we think is on the horizon, and that, we'd like input when we have something to say. And it can be a lot of hard work. And I like to think that people do, like you say, look out for us, or at least think of us doing a lot of that work, because it can be tough to stay motivated and have it in the tank, so to speak, be like charged up for the work of it. So thanks for the sentiment.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming, even depressing at times. But then the next day, somebody buys a full set or a lifetime subscription, and we feel good again. So hopefully, there are enough people out there that will continue doing that. And we're going to have tickets for our conference going on sale in the next couple of weeks as well. So, a strong showing there allows us to do the conference and to keep the magazine going and to expand, do more things. We want to do more things. We want to play with more technology and report on more things and be in more places. So it really depends on the support we get.
Yeah, we've been organizing a lot of stuff and making room for new stuff, and just cleaning and being sort of ready to embrace some of that stuff. So please, thanks for the support.
Yes, I am happy that hopeful will be every year.
Yeah, I think that's going to be fun. I think that's going to make it a lot easier to do the conference, because the problem, we did it every 2 years because it was so much work at the hotel in Manhattan. But now that it's every year, we don't have to reinvent how to do a conference every 2 years, because, we'd have to reconnect with people, build a new site. And if it's just an ongoing process, then it becomes a bit more streamlined. And St. John's is a much better place as far as having things work smoothly. We have so much more support there. So that's what we're looking forward to. Can I ask what part of Canada are you calling from?
It's Richmond, BC. It's just south district of Vancouver.
Oh, great. Okay. Beautiful country there.
Yeah. I think we actually met at one time in New York City.
Oh, yeah?
At the end of Hope.
Uh-huh.
You meet so many people, I don't expect you to remember.
Well, I don't even know which Hope it was. So, yeah, it all merges together sometimes.
Hope 10, I think. No.
Hope X. Yeah, that'd be Hope X.
11.
Oh, 11, the 11th Hope.
Hope 11.
I feel like I'm being tested on my...
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent.
Well, hopefully we'll see you at Hope 16, I believe is what this one is called.
Yes. Hopefully.
All right. And, you know, we will also have remote capabilities, too, in case you can't. So we have that as well.
Yes. Well, I'll go to the virtual Hopes if I'm not there physically.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever works. All right. Thank you so much for your call, and thanks for your support.
Yes. Yes. Have a good new year.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Oh, a nice call there. I'm glad people are asking questions. It's important. And we have room for maybe one more call, 802-321-4225. Anyone else have anything they would like to add? Skype people. No? Everybody?
It is exciting stuff, and I'm seeing a lot of posting around, you know, a lot of New Year's posts, but I think by and large, and I don't know if I was expecting this, especially given everything that's going on, but by and large, I'm seeing a lot of sort of optimistic New Year's posts. Like, despite everything, it feels like it may be a good year. And of course, it's up to all of us to make it that way. But, you know, I think I was expecting to be more generally depressed than I am right now. And
look, there's always time to be depressed, but, you know, the time to be obstinate and fight back and do your own thing and say, what are you going to do about it? You know, let's at least give that a try. And I kind of feel like, you know, that's what we should do. We'll see.
There's a phone call.
Okay, let's take up the phone. Probably the last phone call of the night. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, Governor.
It's Zap from London, if I am not mistaken.
Hell yeah.
You're correct.
I am correct.
I'll ring in and say hello.
Well, Happy New Year to you over there in the UK.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, Happy New Year to everyone and everyone in the chat.
And how did things go over there?
For me, it was a quiet one. But yeah, it went okay, as far as I know.
Quiet is good. Quiet can be good sometimes, you know. I'm not a big fan of crowds.
Yeah, neither am I. But I'm just thinking, the last callers from Canada, there's no meetings in Canada, is there?
I don't know what's going on with that. I really don't. It's such a weird thing. We used to have so many 2600 meetings in Canada. They were in Ottawa and Toronto and Vancouver. I think we even had one in St. John's, Newfoundland at one point. And, you know, ever since COVID, they haven't come back. What we've done is we've required meetings to contact us, you know, at meetings@2600.com. Email us, say that you've started meetings up again, first Friday of the month. You know, the usual thing. And not one. Actually, there was one, and it petered out. You know, I'm talking Winnipeg, I'm talking Edmonton, Montreal, Quebec City, all these places have hackers. I'm sure they do, unless there was a hacker purge I'm not aware of. We really, really, really would like to see meetings in Canada. I don't know what's going on. We get so many Hope attendees from Canada. You know what it could be, and Zap, you know something about this, organizing a meeting, it takes determination. It takes just basically saying, I'm going to do this, and then letting people know that you did it. But other than that, it's not a whole lot of work or responsibility. It's just basically being consistent and friendly and, you know, open to more people showing up and you know, getting the word out. Did I cover all bases?
Yeah, I believe so. Hopefully the last caller will get the hint to start a meeting. Please start one up in Canada.
Well, it's not one particular person's responsibility, but I hope that somebody in Canada the desire to do this or the frustration of not having meetings around. It's really not that difficult. We have the guidelines on our website, 2600.com/meetings. It's really simple to do. You don't have to lead a meeting or, you know, there's no agenda. Some meetings do it differently, but for the most part, it's like a gathering. It's like a gathering in a food court once a month, and you meet people that are into technology, and you get to have more friends than you thought you had. And basically, we try to have them in public spaces, so they're easy to get to and also easy to leave when you want to leave. And cities tend to be the best place for this. You know, I can't tell you the changes in the hacker community that have occurred because of the meetings in London, in Manchester, in New York, in all of these various places. And if you look at our meeting list, which is up on the site, you see that we have meetings all over the world in some far-flung places. So it's definitely doable.
Yeah, definitely. And I've made some lifelong friends, some really good friends from people I've met at the meetings that I'm still in touch with. So, yeah, going to a meeting is beneficial, and it's sort of the first step to breaking maybe into info security if you want to get into that kind of line of work. So it's really good. But one of the main reasons I'm phoning tonight is to tell you about the UK meetings that are happening this Friday.
Please do.
Let me think. Manchester are having their meeting on Friday, and Bournemouth are having their meeting on Friday. Cheltenham haven't got back to me. Unfortunately, London are postponing for a week. And the new meeting, Birmingham, I'd like to give a shout out to Hero, who's doing a lot of hard work trying to get these meeting off the ground, is also having it on the 10th.
Okay.
Other news is I'm heard that there's going to be finally a meeting in Wales. I just need to gently push the person who said they would start the meeting up. And that's about it, really.
Okay, I'm trying to get online here so that I can look at our list. But I think at least one of those was...
Birmingham isn't listed.
Yeah.
They did write in, and they got a... I don't know if it was an automatic response or a response from someone, and there was some kind of issue why they couldn't get listed. And I told the guy not to take it to heart, and maybe I'll write in and put the meeting up myself. Because if you know it comes from me,
well, if we know, what the issue was, I'd like to know what that is. Well, we have Bournemouth, we have Cheltenham, London, Manchester, and Glasgow in Scotland.
Yeah,
that's everything for the UK.
That's all the meetings that I know of. There may be some official, unofficial meetings. Like there's one in Ireland. I can never remember if it's on the British side or the Irish side that one guy runs and another person turns up, and that's about it.
We have one in Dublin.
Right, okay, I think it might be the Belfast one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I'm not
saying, I don't know which side.
I'm not seeing Belfast in our listing, so...
yeah.
We'd love to have them.
To go at that person.
We would love to have them in the listing. The only criteria is first Friday of the month, unless, for religious reasons. I know when Israel had meetings, we had those, I think, on Thursday instead. And that worked out fine. It's just we can't have meetings all different days, because then you have to double the size of the page that lists them and have all kinds of asterisks and stars and things like that. And the first Friday does tend to work, and it's easy to remember. So I don't think that's an issue, though. I don't think that's a problem for most people.
No, it's just very rarely that the meeting's held on another Friday for whatever reasons. Mm-hmm. We tend to do this in the UK quite a bit, actually. But we try and post it on the Twitter, Blue Sky, and maybe I'll phone into the radio show just to let everyone know. But we tend to have our meetings on the first Friday. I didn't go too many times last year, so my New Year's resolution is to attend more of the London meetings and be more regular.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. You're a calming presence at those places, so it's good to...
Well, funny enough, all the other UK meetings are all based off the London model, because people keep asking me. I've sort of missed the 2600 in the UK. They say, how do I start a meeting? Can I have your blessing? And I keep telling them, you don't need my blessing. Just read the guidelines, set it up, and I'll start promoting it.
Yes, definitely. You know who has a really good meeting is Stockholm in Sweden. I keep hearing great things about that meeting. They have a lot of people show up every month. But we also have meetings in Kazakhstan. We've got meetings in Japan, Colombia. We started meetings up in Australia again, so they're everywhere. We even have a meeting in Russia, so they're all over the place. So Canada, come on, let's come back into the hacker world. We want to see you again.
Yeah, definitely need to get Canada coming up. And I know that Wales, we haven't had one in Wales for a long time, so I'm glad that's going to be starting up again.
Just please make sure we get the listing, because we'd love to have Wales as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to pressurize the person who said she's willing to do it. It's a woman. So I'm just going to leave her to have her Christmas and New Year's, and then I'm going to suggest after Friday about the meeting to see if she was serious.
And,
because I don't want to put any pressure on her.
You probably know this, Zach, but I mean, it takes a person to start it, to get the word out. Hey, this is happening. Maybe, stick some flyers in appropriate magazines and bookstores so people stumble upon it. But once it's actually going, you don't really need to maintain it. You don't need to, you're not the boss. You're not somebody that, figures all these things out. It's just basically something that is self-propelled at that point. You've started it. It's like, when you start a fire and it spreads out of control. Probably not the best example, but it's just something that
it takes one person to get going, and then it's an entity after that.
Yeah, but you've got to keep stoking the fire. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it just tends to fade out.
True.
I mean, I don't know if Birmingham was on version 2 or version 3, because there was originally a Birmingham meeting. The only problem was it was held on a Saturday, so it never got official recognition.
Right.
In the UK, we recognized it, but it wasn't recognized by the magazine, unfortunately.
Well, you know, we can always work things out. If there are situations where it's, you know, not possible to do something for whatever reason, you know, we're open to that. It's just, it starts to make things a little bit more complicated, but maybe that's what we need to do. So we're open to it for sure.
All right. Well, that's basically it. I'll clear down the line. I don't know if you're going to get another caller in, or you're going to call it a night.
We are going to call it a night, because that's what it is. It's a night. And it's a night for you, too. It's what, 2 in the morning?
Yeah, it's 2-something. I think 2:10 or something, I think. But yeah, it's late. I always listen to the show. I'm always in the chat, counting how many people are in the chat and just having a joke around, basically. It's quite good. I do like the chats. It's good to see all the people. And it's good occasionally to hear somebody from another country. So Canada phoning up today was really good.
That's right.
The kids phoning up, I love, because, you know, these are the new generation of hackers that will be coming into the thing as they get older. So it's always good when you hear kids phone in. Always makes me chuckle.
Even if it's just to use the phone to make a joke or to say something, get something off their mind, it's like they're communicating. And I think we forget, we talk a lot about the technology and how it works, but we forget what power it has to affect people in your lives, or to be playful, or to get a message across. So I think that's a great spirit. I appreciate that, too.
I want to know how they dialed us. I want to know how they found out about us. So many questions. But we're open to all.
Well, hopefully they're still listening, and they'll be listening in the future. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they may turn up to a meeting, hopefully with parents, if they're below a certain age. And if they're above a certain age, they can come by themselves.
That's right. And that's the other thing with meetings. They have to be open to all ages, and they can't have any admission fees. They can't be run by, you know, a company or anything like that. They're just basically open to the public. You know, we want meetings to be where somebody just walking down the street in that area happens upon the meeting and says, "Oh, what are you guys up to?" and learns all about the hacker community, because we're not trying to hide.
Yeah, and that sometimes happens at the London meeting. Somebody say, "What's going on here?" and we explain what's going on, and they say, "Oh, I might come next month. I'm with certain other friends, but maybe I'll turn up next month." And sometimes they do. They come back, and they have a great time, and they stay, and they become lifelong friends.
Isn't that amazing? That's all it takes. And, you know, so much that we have done now, including the conferences, I don't think we could have done without the meetings. So just think of all I heard things from folks at the Loft, you know, the hacker group in Boston, about how the Boston meetings were where some of them met. And that's just incredible. It's really humbling to realize that people are meeting through those meetings and forming lifelong bonds and changing the world, literally changing the world. So, don't short sell them. They are important. They're amazing. And that's why we need more of them.
Yeah, we also need to get 2600 back on the bookshelves, so we can actually go into a shop and buy it.
You know, Zap, you probably know something about this, but there's all kinds of legal issues now when you stock magazines in bookstores in the UK, where if somebody says that what you're talking about is illegal, you can be held liable for that and fined and all kinds of things. So I don't know. I don't know if we want the hassle of that.
Maybe we can arrange something through some back channels, maybe. Something I'm thinking of doing anyway.
I'm listening.
I'm not going to say it on the radio. I'm not silly.
No, just we'll talk to the courier, like, as usual.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that was it. I'll say my goodbyes. I don't know when the next time I phone in. I don't like phoning in all the time. Rebel, please stop phoning in and doing the radio demos of the phones. It's annoying.
Yes, it is. Well, Zap, it was great hearing your voice, and hopefully we'll see you sometime soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right.
But anyway, take care, everyone, and have a good 2025.
We will do our best.
Do the same.
Yes.
Great to hear you. Thanks for calling.
All right. That's our good friend Zap over there in the UK. And I think of a good way to end the program tonight. What do you Skype people think?
Yeah, I think
so.
It's a great plan.
You all talked at the same time. That's awesome.
could do one more. We could, but we'd like to.
Didn't you want to get out early? Now you want to stay late.
Well, I was in London this morning, so now it does feel like 2 o'clock in the morning for me because I flew back from the UK at we got on the air around 11, mm-hmm. 11 a.m. I guess UK time. So I'm all screwed up. My clock is totally screwed up. So I would say I'm up for one more if you want to do it as like a New Year's thing, post 9 o'clock.
Well, they're going to have to call fast if they do, because I think the rest of us are clocking out about now. Rob, Gila, sure. What do you guys?
We can always give them Alex's number if he wants to get a phone call.
Talk to Alex. I think he's lonely and wants to talk to somebody. There's a phone call. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for this. So let's take one more phone call. And good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
I'm calling to see if you guys have any updates on the drones.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm sorry, we missed what you said before. I'm calling. I didn't have the button pressed. Did you say anything before that?
No.
Okay. Do we have any updates on the drones? Well, you know, it's kind of going the way I thought it would, where people just stop talking about it, and it's almost like they're not there, even though I'm sure they are still there and probably were there long before they started to be noticed. I don't know. You guys have any thoughts on this? Alex, you were looking to the skies.
I was looking to the skies. I haven't seen nearly as many drones as the night that when I was crossing over to drone territory in New Jersey, that when I saw maybe 20-something kind of weird objects in the skies going back and forth horizontally. I haven't seen that at all, and I have been doing a lot of driving, actually. Well,
did they not do an airspace closure for that area because of this?
I thought they did an airspace closure for sensitive areas, which I thought they had done before anyway. So I'm not really sure what effect that would have had.
I think what it is to make sure all known traffic and, you know, regular activity stays away so that area can be observed for anomalies. But I think that's where it stands now. It seems to have escalated and been taken more seriously, at least so that if people are observing things, there's no coincidence with regular air traffic, or if it is, it's very obvious and can be ruled out immediately instead of everybody reporting everything they see. I think that just makes it incredibly hard to investigate. So by limiting in areas where there has been some unusual or let's say activity worthy of investigating, mm-hmm. this helps them set up sort of just anybody, I guess, that is taking charge of this, the ability to look further if there's, you know, additional activity. But like you said, someone that was doing this would be aware or an entity, right? Like if they are being observed, a thing that doesn't want to be seen,
right,
will change if it's aware of the behavior that it's widely understood that it's around.
I want to know if people just aren't reporting them as much, or if the media just isn't reporting the fact that people are reporting them still. So I don't know how you find that out exactly, but it does seem like something has changed. But I maintain it's probably that we've become fascinated with something else and just aren't talking about it as much. I could be wrong, though. Carla, did you have any thoughts or theories on this?
I think there are drones. It's just which agency is in charge of them,
mm-hmm.
and they're clearly looking for something. So what are they looking for? And they don't want us to know about it. And I think they also put a statement out to not shoot them down.
Right.
So I thought that was very revealing. They're clearly ours.
Well, it's also the issue of shooting down something in the sky could really be threatening to people on the ground.
Yeah, this is a new... It's a new mode. It's a new type of vehicle. There's new characteristics. And the response to it has to be something that I think is widely agreed upon and safe. And there's, I think, yet, like, it's not colloquial knowledge how to handle something like this, When it is, we'll say, okay, when is this next step going to take place? Like a search and rescue, you know, there's certain things that you expect, or like a press conference, or a, you know, some kind of a base area. All of those things are well established. When this is not something that is well understood, or it encompasses a variety, it looks like a variety of different things, but we haven't really come up with a mechanism to understand what we're even trying to determine, I think that's where you get a lot of speculation, or it creates room for that. So anyway, sorry.
Anything else? Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, but what about, I mean, I don't know, but I think part of the issue with the drones is that we are living now in this world where it's so easy to create fake imagery or to add some kind of after effects, and people are creating so much nonsense and so much nonsense content online about drones in the hope of getting recognized or as clickbait or something like that. So living in this post-truth world where we're not sure what's real or what's fake because of the facility with which we can create fake content is making this, I think, extraordinarily difficult to actually report on. Because part of what I think is so tricky about this story is that there are so many theories, and all the theories have some bits of validity to them, but then there are always certain facts that contradict every single one of these theories. Like the theory that they're hunting for something radiological and looking for some kind of material that may have come into the United States that could potentially be used in a terrorist attack or a dirty bomb, something like that. Well, if that were the case, then why would they only be flying at night? Wouldn't you also have drones flying around during the day looking for that same type of radiological material? But I found it very funny, too, and going back to being in London, you know, I was at my usual haunt, the Chelsea Arts Club, for New Year's Eve and staying there. And I had a whole bunch of people in London asking me about the drones and what I thought and whether I'd seen any of the drones. And so, you know, it's not... Yeah, it's not just the U.S. where people all around the world, I think, have been following this. And I think the caller is right to ask for an update.
But to address the radiological, I think, two things on that. First of all, they could be up there in the daytime. It's harder to see a drone in the daytime than it is at night when it has a light on, assuming it has a light. And number two, that whole radiological thing has been debunked because the drones were noticed before that was missing. So they've been looking for something, if that's what they're doing before that, or they just were being reported before then. Caller, any other words from you? Are you there?
Caller? The only other thing I thought about... Hi, sorry. Sorry, I lost you for a second.
Go ahead.
The only other thought I had was the bird flu. But no, I'm as unsure as you are.
Wait, hang on. Is that a different thought, or are you saying the drones somehow are connected with bird flu?
Maybe, but because I tried to think about what the government wouldn't want to tell us, and what they couldn't control, because this has been going on for a long time, and the last thing they couldn't control was COVID. So if you read about bird flu, getting bad, but it's not near pandemic levels yet. But maybe they're monitoring it with drones.
I'm not sure how you would do that exactly.
Very far reach.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. I'm not sure how you would monitor bird flu with a drone. But I'm not a scientist, so I guess I don't really have the answer
and
to that.
It is possible that multiple chaotic things are going on. I mean, it is that there is a lot of different of these kinds of phenomenon, events, and curiosities, And then, of course, disease. I mean, disease is ever present. And I think you're right. I mean, the bird flu phenomenon itself is concerning. I think there was an article recently about mutations that were potentially able to, in fact, infect the upper respiratory tract in humans. There have been people working in close proximity and otherwise who have become quite ill, people that work in agriculture and other areas near animals. So it's that we want to go down the road where, like, okay, these drones are a delivery mechanism for infecting large populations with bird flu to, you know, see if we can be resilient from... I mean, we can... There's not...
Well, that's a different direction. I think
there's a wild bit of conspiracy right. around what I think the correlation would be. You have to kind of assess, okay, this is occurring, this is also occurring, right. until there's a fact, until there's an investigation, it just becomes like too exhausting, I think, and to suggest the government is so organized, I think gives them way, way, way more credit and power. And I would really need more concrete motivation for if some mechanism of a conspiracy is there, like, what's the point?
Yeah. Well, it could go either way. It could be, you know, somebody trying to infect populations or somebody trying to protect populations. But again, you know, I don't know or believe that there's a connection with bird flu at this stage.
Like, we're crop dusting cattle with, like, aerosol vaccine. I mean, it's you just don't want to go too deep into crazy. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm not saying it's crazy. I'm just saying...
there are crazy things going on.
You gotta have a way of, like, organizing, filtering, and interpreting it, and not creating causation out of correlation.
Yeah. Well, we're going to leave it there, caller, but thank you for bringing that up and getting us talking about it.
Thank you.
All right. You keep listening and take care.
Happy New Year.
You too. Happy New Year. And I think, unless Alex wants to take more phone calls, I think we're done for tonight. Are you okay? Another 20 minutes?
Yeah, that's it. That was an extended session. Aren't you glad we took one last one?
Yeah, then? No, it was a good discussion. I'm not regretting that. I'm just nodding off here because it's been a long day here too.
No doubt.
All right. Well, listen, it's been fun. We begin 2025 with a few bangs and hopefully some good things coming up as well. Please write to us, oth@2600.com. There's a lot coming up in the next couple of weeks for 2600 and HOPE and all sorts of other things that are happening. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And we hope you're a part of that. And looking forward to it, actually. Looking forward to 2025 with as long as you guys are around.
Yeah,
we're absolutely.
All right, well, then I'm going to say goodnight.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Good night, everyone.